Hello, everyone, and welcome into the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. My name is Davis Maddock. I have the great fortune to be joined today by one Mr. Mike Clay from ESPN. You can follow him on Twitter at Mike Clay NFL. Of course, he is biased against your favorite team. But Mike, I'm very glad to have you today, and we are going to chat through some difficult projection spots right now for 2024.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. But you're right. I mean, I just want to come in here just being very clear to everyone listening that if we're talking about your team, I'm against them. Like, I hate them. If you have a division rival that you hate, I love them. That's my favorite team. So that's why the projections are so low. That's why I'm so low on your team. It's just a pure, unadulterated bias. So, as you know, Davis, I post projections for every player, defense, kickers, returners, you name it, rankings for every unit on every team. And all 32 teams think I'm too low on their favorite player, their favorite unit, whatever it is. So that's just my game. That's just how I play. There's bias against them all.
That's how it works. So I am not doing projections. I did not do season-long projections last year, not doing them this year. I have done them for multiple NFL seasons in the past. And I feel like the 2024 season, really, I suppose fantasy football is just going this way in general, where it's becoming a more difficult exercise to project because backfields are becoming more and more split. There are fewer true dominant wide receivers that just you're like, okay, that guy, 30% of the targets, and you just move on from there. And I think the entire exercise is becoming more complicated. But the most complicating factor, Mike, I imagine this season is just how many rookies project to be huge parts of their offenses in 2024.
Yeah, you're exactly right. It does get tricky, and not to mention all the turnover across the NFL as well, the short shelf life for running backs, the Taysom Hill factor. We can go on and on. You know, tight ends deeper than ever now. We don't just have them handful of guys dominating all the targets. But I mean, you're right. I mean, you think about when you and I, you know, we kind of came into the industry around the same time. And even back then, there were a lot fewer, you know, three wide sets. You just basically have the two receivers on the field, and then you'd have like a fullback or a second tight end. And that matters because a lot of those targets are being funneled to two receivers. So now they're going to three guys because you have, slot receivers on the field a lot more often. And you're right, it does make it tricky as the ball gets spread around, and not to mention just the unreal talent coming into the NFL at wide receiver. It's just these guys that even 5-10 years ago might be fine wide receiver threes. Now you're like, man, they're like, I have them like 53rd in my ranks. You know, this is a good player, but the position's so deep, you kind of just have to be a star at the position to be a consistent fantasy option.
That's so true. And rookie wide receivers are contributing earlier than ever. You know, I mean, that's kind of like a macro change about how I've seen a couple posts on this over the last month about how plays are literally called in the huddle or the line of scrimmage where the wide receivers are told what to do in the play call, which is, that's pretty fascinating. So I think there is a spot that intersects with both of these talking points, which is the 2024 Bears and the Bears wide receivers, where you got to do a lot of projection with Caleb, you know, based on what he did, kind of two different players at USC and at Oklahoma. And what are we doing with Adunze versus Keenan? You know, the difference between ceiling outcomes and median outcomes. What are you doing with Bears projections for 2024?
Yeah, you're right. There's a lot of tricky elements to this one, too, because they have a lot of guys to spread the ball around, too. I mean, even something little like signing Gerald Everett as their number two tight end. You know, is he going to eat in Cole Kmet's targets, or are they going to run more? They're going to run more 12 personnel than we expect, even though they have Adunze, Allen, and more. It's just little things like that have to be factored in, because if Everett gets 2-3 targets a game, that thing kind of matters. Also, how is DeAndre Swift going to be utilized? Because, you know, he went from a pass catcher in Detroit to a runner in Philly. Is he going to be a pass catcher again now and in Chicago? So there are a lot of interesting elements. In terms of projecting passing output, Bears fans are going to look at my projection for Caleb around 3,500 yards, 23 touchdowns. That assumes 15 starts. There's always going to be an an injury element in all these projections and say, ah, that's not good enough. But it is. I mean, it would be one of the best rookie quarterback seasons ever. So I am kind of putting myself on the line a little bit with an optimistic projection of 23 passing touchdowns for Williams. But the reason for that is he's walking into maybe the best situation we've ever seen for a first overall pick at the quarterback position. He just, the offense is loaded. He has three, what should be standout wide receivers. He has the two tight ends. He has a pretty good backfield. I like Herbert and Roshan Johnson as well. So really good situation. So a bit of an optimistic projection for him. But you're right, like navigating the wide receivers has been so hard because I think we can all agree DJ Moore is a star receiver, still in his prime, obviously had a right. career year last year. But you can't expect his target share to be where it's been in years past, you know, around 26, 27, 28%. Same thing for Keenan Allen. You know, he's coming off a career high in receptions, and it just doesn't add up, especially when you consider that top 10 receivers in the draft generally see a big target share. So I'm with you. I've had to hedge a bit and move more down my rankings. It moved Keenan Allen well down my rankings. Keep in mind, he's also 32 years old now, so that cliff is coming quickly for him. And now Dunze, you know, he's lower than the other, you know, neighbors in Harrison for sure. But history says these guys are stars and going to be featured right out of the gate. So this, you're right. I mean, this was tough and you have to hedge a little bit, and that's going to bump these guys down the rankings.
I feel like Keenan probably has the most to lose for fantasy football because I think he's unlikely to be like hyper efficient. Not that he can't be efficient, but I think he's unlikely to be like, you know, averaging 14, 15 fantasy points per game with like a 19% target share. In fact, I would say there's like no chance that he's able to match some of his previous seasonal fantasy points per game totals with a decreased target share. Whereas I feel like relative to ADP, Kmet and Adunze have the greatest ability to grow because if it just turns out, oh, Caleb just, or this offense, this Waldron offense is very tight end centric, or Adunze is better than we think, right? Adunze is actually just, he just is open all the time and just the offense kind of naturally drifts towards targeting him more. I feel like Keenan has the highest bust potential out of the three of them, and Adunze definitely has the most room to grow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm with you. And that's, you know, I often get the question, like, what's the difference between projections and rankings? And, you know, you kind of just laid it out. I mean, it's hard to project this offense, you know, all these guys in the offense where we kind of want to put them really high, you know, where they've been in years past. Because if you then add up all the numbers, it's going to be like, well, this is ridiculous. You have Caleb throwing for 4,800 yards as a rookie. Like, that doesn't make any sense. But at the same time, if you're one injury away from a guy being a wide receiver too, you have to consider that, you know, as you get into the middle to the late rounds of your draft. And that's kind of an interesting variable for someone like Odunze. And really that applies to all these guys. You know, one guy goes out, then your number three receiver, suddenly Tyler Scott or Velus Jones. I mean, then those two guys are must starts. So that's interesting for sure. But yeah, I mean, it's so interesting with Odunze because, you know, I looked back at, I recently did an article about, you know, projections for receivers picked in the top 10. 11 of the 14 had at least 865 yards as a rookie. And the exceptions were Tavon Austin, Corey Davis, and Mike Williams. And they all missed quite a few games, at least three for all of them. So when these guys are healthy and on the field, they tend to be featured. Now, again, maybe this is a very unique situation for Odunze because of Moore and Allen. It certainly is, but nonetheless, that's something that we can't completely ignore. It's possible he's the real deal and he steps in there with Caleb and becomes his favorite target or certainly a feature target. That's going to affect everybody else.
Yeah. I mean, that is a good point. There is a key distinction between projections and rankings because rankings are able to, you know, and neither are perfect for the exercise of fantasy football because there are both things that can't be captured in each. You know, the rankings have a better time capturing ceiling, but the projections have a harder time doing if-then statements effectively, which I think is pretty key. In fact, if I could maybe know the touch distribution in any backfield with perfect clarity, I might choose the Los Angeles Rams in 2024. Because the Kyren Williams that we just saw last season, clear top five fantasy football running back, maybe top five pick overall. You might You might actually just take him over Breece Hall or Bijan Robinson, actually, if you just knew that he was returning to the role that he had. The Rams, who in the McVay era have loved to spend second and third round picks on running backs and then not use them and then use them the next year. Like, it's not that taking Blake Corum was that big of a surprise, although you would feel that a roster with these kind of holes maybe would be less interested in taking running backs. And then the first thing that Sean McVay says is, oh, he just reminds us exactly of Kyren. That's very hard to figure out. What do you mean by that? So how are you projecting this backfield, and sort of how do you conceive of Kyren versus Corum and how that plays out?
Yeah, so I'm always going to bet against the extreme. So the usage we saw for Kyren Williams last year, I already had rolled that back before the draft. You know, I don't expect anyone to repeat. I mean, just look at how many guys can play, you know, how many running backs appear in 34 games over 2 seasons. The list is extremely short. It's like Devin Singletary and Najee Harris. That's it. You know, just it doesn't happen. So probably going to miss some time and certainly not going to see, you know, 80% of the carries, 10 to 12% of the targets. That being said, I am not a Blake Corum fan, so there's some element of that that bothers me, you know. So I'm not gonna like go all in on him, you know. Maybe some others really like him and feel like, oh, he's the better prospect, he's gonna take over. You know, I've had success over the years, kind of studying, you know, missed tackle rates and you know, elusiveness, yak, that kind of stuff. From running backs at the college level, and Corum doesn't really stand out. I thought he was kind of underrated, or excuse me, overrated throughout the process. So that's a little bit of a variable when I'm doing kind of the manual inputs of carries and touches. Kyren, on the other hand, like I loved him coming out. Like I loved him the whole pre-draft process. His efficiency at college was amazing, and then he disappointed at the combine, obviously with the speed. And I'm like, oh no, that's like a huge red flag. And then we were all kind of, I guess, too low on him. But yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I think McVay is going to essentially commit to one guy for the most part. But I think they just have to take a little bit off of Williams. It was just too much last year. That extreme, that like 100th percentile sort of usage, it's just not going to happen in the NFL. So I think, you know, maybe he gets 70, 80% of last year. That's still going to be mid-range RB1. Even if it's back end RB1, I think where he's going in drafts is perfectly fine. Corum, I think, will be the clear number two. And he'll be one of those guys that's on the end of our benches. And if Williams misses time, he's going to be a must start in fantasy just because of the volume and the scheme here. But yeah, I'm still in on Kyren.
So how, for something like this, how much are you leaning on, okay, this is what McVay did when he had Cam Akers and Daryl Henderson. This is what he did when Ronnie Rivers entered the rotation. Like, are you really heavily baking in prior coaching splits? I mean, that to me feels like that feels like the easiest way to do something like this.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, some coaches are to the extreme where you're like that. Yeah, they always go to one guy. Others are go to the extreme where you know they're going to use three. You know, you think about teams that are just going to have a pass catcher and a, you know, the Patriots come to mind during the Belichick and McDaniels era where you knew if James White went out, they would just plug in another pass catcher and he was going to be out there for, you know, for the most part, assuming they had the personnel. Someone's going to be out there and, you know, as a dedicated receiving running back. I guess Ramondre Stevenson kind of changed that a little bit that 1 year. But yeah, I mean, you can learn a little bit, but also the sample is so small with backfields and it's so personnel dependent that it's hard to get too wrapped up in that. I think sometimes you have to use a little bit of common sense based on who's on the roster. And in this case, I just think like Kyren played at a very high level. We got a very, you know, he very clearly defeated Cam Akers and took control of this backfield and was treated as a feature back. And again, we have a history of McVay treating these guys as feature backs when they show they can handle it. So I expect something similar this season. Like I said, I still think Williams will be the clear one. It's just not going to be quite where he was last season. That was just too much. Over 80% of the snaps are a running back is just ridiculous. So I think their plan was pretty clear. Let's spend a day two pick. Bring in a running back that's, you know, a little bit bigger. Corm's a little bigger. They can handle a little bit of the maybe some of the early down carries, give Williams a series off. They just didn't have that last year. They just didn't have a number two guy. So I think that's what's going to happen. I think that's the most likely outcome. It's just a little less for Williams, but still the clear lead back.
It is sort of fascinating just how bad the other running backs on the roster were, you know, like Royce Freeman and Ronnie Rivers and stuff. So yeah, like having a capable second running back, especially for an offense that does ask a lot of the running back. You know, this is not one of these insane pass rate over expectation offenses. Like McVay likes to run the ball. Sticking with the theme of rookies, I mean, I feel like the Commanders offense could be almost anything. You know, we've got a new coach, we've got a new coordinator. You know, Cliff has worked with mobile quarterbacks in the past to varying degrees of success. I think his detractors would say to no success, and people who are a little bit more open-minded would say, you know, things have been all right. But they bring in a rookie wide receiver, a rookie tight end. They have Jahan Dotson, who was pretty efficient as a rookie, horribly inefficient last season. I mean, I could buy anything from Jaden Daniels wins offensive rookie of the year, and you know, they win 9 games in that division, to this is kind of a bad situation for everyone, and it's an unhappy marriage between Jaden and Cliff.
Yeah, I'm with you. I, you know, like many, I looked at the Kingsbury offense before the draft even popped up, and you know, we know what we had in Arizona. That from it was a fun fantasy offense because it was so fast paced, and you know, I think people probably assume a run heavy offense as well because Kyler was there, and that was not true. They actually, you know, game script adjusted, leaned a little bit toward the pass, and again, certainly the fastest paced offense in the NFL. And you're right. I mean, it was pretty good the first 3 years. Kyler was good in fantasy, and we had some productive pass catchers. I believe the 1 year wasn't DeAndre Hopkins like wide receiver 4 or something like that. You know, so he's produced some big seasons for some of these guys, and that's kind of how I have this one projected. You know, I think it'll lean a little toward the run just because Daniels is such an extremely good runner and also a rookie, and we tend to see first year quarterback limited a little bit. What they ask of them, but also fast pace, you know, no huddle. They're going to move the ball quick, and that's going to add some volume from a fantasy perspective. And that's why my Jaden Daniels pass volume projections are kind of lining up with some of these other guys. Even though he's going to run a lot, he's going to throw a lot too, just because of this scheme. So, I like it. I think it's going to be good for fantasy. You're right. I mean, what it really comes down to, it's less about Kingsbury, more about Jaden Daniels. Like, is he the real deal or not? That's always the big question. If he's the real deal, it's not going to matter. This offense is going to flourish. If he just has his normal rookie hills and valleys, you know, we'll have our ups and downs. It's going to be an inconsistent offense. And then there's the opposite, which is he just stinks. And that's a very real possibility that I feel like we don't talk about much, is like, as that's especially when I get heat for projections. I think like no one is like really considering the fact that these guys might be bust, and half of the guys picked just in the first round won't even get a second contract. They're going to be bust half of
Right.
the first round, including some of these quarterbacks. So you have to consider that when you're evaluating these guys in fantasy.
I mean, that is like a very difficult thing to consider when you are when you're drafting these teams. I mean, this is such an optimistic time of the year. Like no one's really injured right now. You know, we have a couple of suspensions happening on the periphery, and we just watched Jaden Daniels win the Heisman. We just watched Jaden Daniels be the most effective deep passer in the NFL, and then the sobering reality hits pretty quickly once the season starts, which is there are, you know, defenses these guys have never seen. They are, you know, no longer the best athlete on the field. I think that'll be pretty interesting for Daniels, is what does his rushing look like in the NFL when he no longer is always the fastest, you know, most shifty guy on the field. There are safeties that, you know, who are faster than him there, and Daniels at LSU just like loved to get tackled. I mean, this guy would just get lit up by these linebackers all the time. I mean, I would, how many games do you have him projected for? Do you do anything extra for his for injury stuff there?
I didn't. I just don't have any sort of compelling evidence to drop him. I mean, rookie quarterbacks generally are going to miss a couple of games, but that kind of is a league-wide thing. So I have him at 15 starts. So definitely some injury rate in there, but nothing that's too extreme. But I mean, it's a fair point. We did see that with Richardson last year, you know, taking a couple hits, and I know it was his shoulder, but yeah, he got crushed a few times too, and missed a lot of time. So that's definitely something to think about, because you know their backup is it's Marcus Mariota, and from a fantasy perspective, I don't think we're feeling too good about that.
No. And then what about Ertz versus Sennett? A weird situation there, where Ertz signs really early in free agency for like not nothing, right? $5 million. They spend a high day two pick on Ben Sennett, who really only played tight end for one season at K-State and was mostly a fullback. And you know, that's kind of hard to fit in a Cliff offense. I don't know what to make of that. I mean, I want Sinnett to be good, but I just don't really know.
Yeah, so it's funny you bring that up because I just was working on that a little bit. I made a little bit of an adjustment on that share and kind of moved them a closer to each other. At first, it's like, yeah, okay, they bring in Ertz. They have nobody else there. Logan Thomas is gone. He actually just signed with the 49ers to back up Kittle. And then it's like, okay, so he's going to have somewhat of a role. They don't have anybody else. But man, I mean, he couldn't even. He literally got cut by Arizona last year and then couldn't make an active roster the rest of the season. He was on the Lions practice squad. So what does he have left in the tank at, you know, he'll be almost 34 years old. Does he have enough to be a one all season? I highly doubt that, considering what we saw last year. So I think it's just a matter of time for Sinnott to take over as the number one. It might take a month or so, but you know, he's a second round pick and we've seen tight ends make an earlier and earlier impact over the past few years. So I'm a little bit more optimistic about him. I'm just not going to get carried away with a rookie tight end. You know, it's just so hard for those guys to get into the tight end one conversation. And you know, so it like I said before, it kind of just comes down to Daniels, right? I mean, if he
Right.
is a standout player right out of the gate, it's possible he's a good tight end too, maybe a streamer as the season gets rolling, but it's just so rare, especially with the tight end depth right now. It's so rare for these guys to get into that tight end one conversation. So I maybe a deep league late round flyer for the rookie, but I wouldn't go much further than that.
Yeah, I mean, people are pretty in on Sinnott, especially in these best ball drafts. Definitely partially because people are so in on Jaden Daniels. I just am, you know, I'm unsure. I think that'll be a spot where camp will tell us a lot. I mean, I definitely do think Ertz week one, Ben Sinnott's running 11 routes, and Ertz is going to be out there for as much as his body will allow him, and it'll just we'll see what happens over the rest of the year after that. Now, rookie tight ends, kind of all the rage after last season, after, you know, Laporta literally finishes tight end one. Such a bizarre situation where Brock Bowers gets drafted 13th overall to the Raiders. Terry and Arnold on TV says the Raiders told him they flipped a coin between him and Bowers and ended up picking Bowers. Now, I mean, maybe that's not true. But it seems bizarre to add Brock Bowers to a team that doesn't have a quarterback, has Devontae Adams, and how about the really strong season Jakobi Meyers had last year? And it's hard for me to imagine Michael Mayer, after playing okay last season as a rookie, going to zero. I mean, what do you make of this situation? And with that, and with the two different styles of quarterback play as well, it's very difficult.
Yeah, I think Bowers will essentially be a wide receiver. Mayer will be on the field a lot of 12 personnel. They should be near the probably top five and 12 personnel. They don't really have a good number three receiver situation. Michael Gallup, they brought in. You know, he was getting passed out by Jalen Tolbert in Dallas last season. Trey Tucker, Jalen Guyton, old friend from the Chargers. Like those are the guys battling for that three job. So I think you're going to see Adams, Myers, Bowers, Mayer, and certainly Zamir White on the field together. That should be their core five. Bowers, I mean, again, it's so tricky with rookie tight ends. The ceiling is just low for the most part. I mean, you have rare exceptions, like Laporta, who you just mentioned, but otherwise, it just, you know, it doesn't really happen. So it's just there's a learning curve, and he's so young too. So you know, for every Laporta, there's you know five, you know, Kyle Pitts's or and even you know George Kittle, who was basically like a tight end too as a rookie. You look at the star tight ends in the league. Generally, it took them a couple of years to really get going. Some of it took a long time. Evan Ingram, David Njoku, you know, go back to Brandon Pettigrew, guys like that. T.J. Hockenson before he really got rolling. It takes some time. So I'm not getting too carried away. I have Bowers ranked right around, I believe, tight end 13. And again, part of he might be, you know, a few years ago, he might be a little higher, but we have so many just quality options in that mid tight end one range. So I have him at a week one target share of 17%. That's probably a fair number, especially if you assume Devontae Adams is still going to be a feature target. And yeah, I like Jakobi Meyers a lot. He, by the way, is a good example of the value of projections because when you do all this and you do like a baseline projection for everyone, you're going to see guys that pop out and it's like, okay, yeah, he's a pretty good player. You know, his target share is going to be high because they don't have anyone else. And he just shows up really high. It's like kind of interesting. Maybe like Darnell Mooney this year in Atlanta kind of fits that bill. There's guys like that who you're just like, yeah, maybe not the most exciting player, but the targets are going to be there. So, you know, not the worst late round sleeper, but yeah, I'm with you. Not getting too carried away in Bowers in year one. It's probably going to take a little time.
It's such a difficult thing to deal with that where really talented player, the opportunity is hard to project. Where the opposite, the Darnell Mooney situation, which is there's no one else. I mean, you get past, you look at the Falcons depth chart past those guys, and you're like, what is the alternative? Kadarrell Hodge, Ray McLeod, Chris Blair, off Casey Washington, who I like literally just learned was on the roster like a week ago, because I was like, you know, I kind of tend to not be that into guys like Darnell Mooney, where I think the talent is either average or below average, but the role is there. I philosophically as a drafter, I like spots more like Bowers, where it's like, well, the opportunity is not that clear, but if he is as good as I think he is, the opportunity will be created. But that's a harder thing to do with projections, because you were having to take sides on something that's not 50-50, you know, that's 65-35.
Yeah, and again, that's part of you know, like the gamesmanship of a draft. Like, are you ready to pounce on a guy who maybe your league starts three receivers and a flex and the two running backs, and you're like, all right, you know, I'll take a Myers or a Mooney, because this guy might, you know, be just like a solid flex option or a wide receiver three during bye weeks or something like that. And he's going in the 13th round. I'm fine with that. Whereas Bowers, you're right, more exciting, perhaps a league winner, certainly more interesting in the later rounds, but he's more expensive because of that reason. He has the name, he has the pedigree. You know, in fact, Bowers, you know, going several rounds ahead of someone like Darnell Mooney. So, I'm with you. It's just, you just got to keep walking that line. You know, there's value in guys that are, you know, don't have a massive ceiling necessarily, but you know, you might need them. But if you have a couple injuries, a couple bye weeks, these guys can be just solid, you know, 8, 9, 10 point guys and move you on to the next week. You know, it could be to help you win a week here or there. So, it is that battle, like going through a draft, trying to draft upside guys, league winning guys, but also making sure you have a competent lineup every week as well.
Yeah, I mean, look, there sometimes you do need Jakobi Meyers to 12 and a half points to get you across the finish line. In a lot of spots, best ball, redraft, dynasty, whatever. Okay, this next team, the Green Bay Packers. I mean, I feel like you could just have any take you wanted. You could be, oh, actually, Dobbs is the number one. Actually, Bo Melton's going to work his way into the rotation. Yes. Yeah, Dontavian Wicks is literally everyone who plays fantasy football. Dontavian Wicks is their favorite player. Jaden Reed was a one-year gadget player. Jaden Reed is the best player. I mean, what do you – I mean, Tucker Kraft played more snaps than Luke Musgrave in the playoff game. How are you approaching this? Are you just giving them all – 13.5% target shares and saying, you know, you figure it out.
I hate it. This is tough. This is just one of those brutal situations. You know, you could even talk running back, because they have, you know, three guys that might play there. You know, does AJ Dillon get the goal line? I loved Marshawn Lloyd as a prospect. Are they going to scale back Josh Jacobs or feature him? There's so you can play this game at all three positions here. I hedged on tight end. I basically split 20% of the targets down the middle between Kraft and Musgrave, but I rank them a little higher than where they pop in projections, because again, if one of them takes control, then you know they could potentially be on that tight end one radar. So I think that's the attack there with the tight end, just take a late flyer. And wide receiver is the fun one. I mean, I basically have Watson, Dobbs, and Reed as the 1, 2, 3, with Wicks as the clear number four there. I mean, they told us that's their plan last year, and I expect that to be the same. I know Wicks played well. A lot of people are high on him, so maybe this is going to be a swing and miss for me. But I mean, that's what they did. When Watson was healthy, he was the one. I mean, it was very clear that when he was good to go, he was the one. They liked him the most. He got a bazillion end zone targets, a lot of volume, vertical routes, you name it. I still think he is their best wide receiver. So if I can get a discount on him, I'm going to take it. Yeah, Reed's an interesting one, because I'm generally going to be off of the touchdown regression guys. You know, he had 10 touchdowns. It was very fluky. he might score five this year. He still have a great season, be great for the Packers. It's just not going to be a 10 touchdown season. And then Dobbs, not really interested in him. I think targets will come down a little bit. And yeah, I'm just not going to draft Wicks. If Wicks goes off and I'm wrong and he's a top three guy and he makes a leap forward from last year, and keep in mind with all the hype that exists with Wicks, he had a 10% target share last year as a fifth round rookie. Okay. Like for a fifth round rookie, that's decent, but it's a small sample. He had a 10% target share last year. We don't want to get too carried away with this guy just yet. But yeah, if I'm wrong and he makes a big leap and he's the guy, I will be totally wrong because I just don't see how he gets enough targets if the other three are healthy.
It's definitely true. The Wicks bet is Jaden Reed kind of never becomes more than a 60%, 65% route share guy. Watson either is unable to stay healthy or in an effort to keep him healthy, the team shades his routes back, and that Dobbs is just whatever, and that it's kind of enough snaps there, enough routes there for four guys to kind of vacillate between 60 and 70% route shares, depending. And you know, that is nothing to say about the tight ends and additional 12 personnel or whatever. And, you know, that it kind of all comes down to Jordan Love, who you can find varying opinions about. You know, a lot of people think he sun run, you know, a very high touchdown rate, yada, yada, so on and so forth. I tend to believe that Jordan Love is one of the 10 best quarterbacks in the NFL, probably, and that these guys are mostly being drafted appropriately. But, I mean, that's another projection thing that's hard to deal with, is because it all kind of flows out from the efficiency of the quarterback. And if the base level quarterback efficiency is wrong, that, I mean, it can nuke everyone else.
Yeah, I hear you. I mean, my highest ranked Packers wide receiver is still Christian Watson. I just think he has the highest ceiling for sure.
That's pretty interesting, because that's not the way the market has it at all.
Yeah, Reed, of course, ahead by a lot. I'm just not interested at him where he's being drafted. I just don't really understand it with Jaden Reed at his ADP. So, I point that out because I have Watson 40th. You know, I have Reed one spot behind at 41, and then it's a big drop to the other guys. So I am absolutely hedging on this group. And the thing is, with the depth at wide receiver, I don't know that you need to play that game early in the draft. I mean, fifth, sixth, or seventh even round. Sure. Like, you don't really need to draft these guys, because look at the other guys around them. There's guys that you know are going to be full-timers and get decent target shares and be involved. So I just don't find – I can't imagine I'm going to draft a ton of these guys aside of maybe Watson. You know, if he keeps falling and people are jumping on Wicks, you know, I'll take that dart. But otherwise, I'm not super interested in it, just because you don't have to. You don't have to play that game where they're going.
You don't. I mean, look, I'll admit, I am a total Wicks slappy. Not really that into Reed. You have me reconsidering the Christian Watson stuff. I mean, he's available at a pretty appealing price, and I like him a good bit more than the guys who go immediately after him, you know, kind of Jameson Williams, Cortland Sutton style guys that just are not that, just not that exciting to me. Okay. The Buffalo Bills remove, you know, their heliocentric guy of the offense. I feel like these situations are quite hard, where it's like, there's just been a 28, 29, 30% target share in this offense for as long as this group of players has been together, and then you remove them. There's one wide receiver on the roster who's caught a pass from Josh Allen, Khalil Shakir, who has basically been benched anytime the Bills coaching staff can bench him. You know, they're playing Deontay Hardy and Trent Sherfield ahead of Khalil Shakir for stretches last year. My base rate assumption is that the market is too high on Dalton Kincaid, because I don't believe that he's a guy who can sustain a 25, 27% target share on a winning offense. Again, you can find different opinions out there. I feel like Keon Coleman also is a very hard guy to project.
Yeah, I'm with you for sure. Also, because Coleman just turned 21. I mean, he's very young, and sometimes those guys have a little bit of a learning curve. The most interesting one has been, you know, the pushback I've gotten on Shakir. I mean, Bills fans seem convinced this guy is a superstar. And I think part of that is because you saw a lot of big plays last year. His efficiency was extremely high, but you know, as I kind of laid out on Twitter not long ago, the yards per target he put up was one of the highest in the past decade. And you might think, well, that's a good thing, right? I mean, that's great. That means he's good. Not really. I mean, every single player that's been in that range has seen a big dip the next season. In fact, I posted it actually goes back to 2011, 47 receivers with at least 45 targets and a yards per target of at least 10.77. And then those guys played the next season. All 47 saw a dip in yards per target. 47 out of 47. And the average
That's
was
crazy.
About by 3 yards. I mean, and I also looked at like, okay, so the efficiency comes down. Maybe that's because the volume goes up. And that's not the case either. It's almost parallel. He has 65 targets through two seasons as a fifth rounder. I mean, here are some guys who had more targets than him, other fifth round or other day three picks who had more targets than him through two seasons. Tyler Johnson, Tajay Sharp, KJ Osborne, Kenny Stills, JJ Nelson, Trent Taylor, MVS, Renfro. I mean, these are guys that at various times we were like, okay, maybe some sleeper potential here, some hype, you know, they splashed a little, had some targets their first 2 years, maybe they make a leap. Did I list anyone that took off? I don't think so.
No, this is crazy. I found this the other day. I mean, this feels unbelievable, but Hunter Renfro had a top 12 PPR season in 2021. It's insane. Right. No one remembers it. I mean, he's not on a roster right now. 2021, 103 receptions, 1,000 yards, 9 touchdowns. It's completely, I completely memory wiped it. I forgot it happened.
Yeah, it's unreal. So I just think that the hype on him is a little out of control, but maybe that's just me taking a beating on social from like Bills fans. I don't know. You know, I don't know where he's going to eventually
settle
in.
No, I'm with
in,
you. But you don't sign Curtis Samuel, draft a first round wide receiver, and then bring in every cast off wide receiver you can,
yes.
AJ Hamler. And like, you don't do that if you feel comfortable with what you have in the building. Like the Chiefs last year, they knew their wide receivers weren't great, but they were like, whatever, you know, Sky and Tony, they'll be fine. They didn't bring in Jarvis Landry and Jamison Crowder. And like, they didn't bring in five different guys. The Bills pretty clearly don't want to give Khalil Shakir the ball 100 times. That is not the plan.
Right. I'm with you. And that makes it interesting. You know, you make the Chiefs comp, and I've made that as well, because you know, I'm very curious how the wide receiver room is going to affect this offense. You talk about the Chiefs and how, yeah, they still went on and won the Super Bowl and all that. But the offense was the worst during the Mahomes era. I mean, their offensive EPA plummeted last year. They're still above average, but barely. I mean, they had been elite for so long. You know, is that what's going to happen in Buffalo? You know, are they going to drop off and have some trouble, you know, moving the football because of this wide receiver group? It's very possible, and we need to be prepared for that possibility. The good news is Allen, you know, from his perspective, is just going to run so much. I mean, he had as many rushing touchdowns as Jalen Hurts did last year. He's just going to keep running the ball. So we don't have to worry about that much, but I do worry about what the passing game is going to look like here a little bit in Buffalo.
That's a pretty good point. Although I think you could pretty effectively argue that it might even end up benefiting Josh from a fantasy perspective, because if he if he runs for 17 touchdowns, or if he runs for the most yards he's ever ran for in a season because the offense just needs it, that I mean probably will help him for fantasy points per game wise, I would think.
Oh yeah, he's still my number one quarterback. Don't get me wrong.
I think that is fairly consensus. How does he compare? Mm-hmm. Oh, let's do this. Saquon Barkley. So Jason Kelce retires. Jalen Hurts, you know, master of the tush bush. He can squat 600 pounds. I mean, they do change offensive coordinator. They bring Kellen Moore in. There's enough there that I think you can talk yourself into. Actually, they are going to give Barkley 1 yard touchdowns. I'm pretty firmly in the camp that they will not. And that Barkley is being overdrafted as a result of that. Where do you fall?
Yeah, so I'm pretty optimistic because, and you mentioned it at the top, there's just not many running backs that are going to be featured, and I think he is. I just don't know that there's anyone that's gonna touch him. I mean, Kenny Gainwell, Will Shipley, who I was not a fan of in the pre-draft process as well, old friend Tyrion Davis-Price, like none of these guys worry me at all. So I fully expect, think about it. If you make a short list of running backs most likely to play, we'll say 75% of the snaps when healthy, Barkley's right up there. I mean, Christian McCaffrey, Barkley, I mean, he is on that list for sure. In fact, last year he played 80% of the snaps with the Giants. The year before, 80% of the snaps when he was healthy. So I expect that in Philly. I think that's, you know, the reason they brought him in, to try to copycat the 49ers and have that sort of featured player. So with you, you know, I think can he score 10 touchdowns? Yeah, I have him projected at 11. I think that's a very real possibility. And that's with Hurts still running for a ton. They will still do the tush push, but it's like going to be a good offense. He's going to be behind a really good offensive line. He's going to catch a couple touchdowns most likely. And we you look at running back touchdowns scored by running backs in the Eagles offense during the Hurts era. And there are, you know, not great numbers, but they've had some good numbers in there as well. I don't have them right in front of me. I tweeted it not long ago, but there's enough there that you feel like, all right, even if I get eight out of them, if I get eight touchdowns out of Barkley, and he gets this massive amount of volume, like we've seen from years past, a lot of catches as well, let's say 40 to 50 catches, which I think is a very real possibility, you're fine. You know, he's going to be an RB1 in fantasy. So I'm not worried about it. I feel like he's one of the most high floor players in fantasy this year.
He definitely has a high floor. I mean, I don't, you definitely cannot argue against that, because you're right. I mean, even DeAndre Swift had a relatively high floor, being a much worse player than Saquon Barkley. He ended up with 1,200 yards, 6 touchdowns, only caught the ball 39 times. And I mean, I think that is another issue with Barkley, is Hurts is just not going to throw the ball to the running back the way that exists in other offenses. And, you know, you've got 58% of the targets that have to go to two wide receivers as well anyway. But Barkley's going to be way more efficient than DeAndre Swift because he's better. And it's certainly more possible that they do the 1 yard touchdown stuff with Barkley than they ever did with Swift or with Gainwell or Boston Scott or whomever, you know, like,
yeah,
maybe that is the plan.
Yeah. I actually just pulled it up. Yeah. 14 touchdowns per season during Hurts's 3 years as a starter. And that was actually, it was only 8 last year in the Swift year. So it's 16, yeah. 18, 8. So, I mean, if you're in that 16, 18 range, you assume, you know, again, 75% of them go to Barkley, you know, you're talking 10, 12 touchdowns. So again, it's all a math game with stuff like that. You know, it's not like they're going to score 6 touchdowns. It's a very real possibility that they score 15 or so touchdowns as a running back room. And with most of them going to Barkley, it's definitely, it's realistic to suggest they'll get to double digits.
All right. Last season, Raheem Mostert leads the NFL in touchdowns, despite not being the most efficient running back on his roster. Raheem Mostert is, as of now, we'll see if Latavius Murray re-signs or if Brandon Bolden makes a roster. But right now, Raheem Mostert is the oldest running back in the NFL. Now, we know that NFL guys can kind of be okay until they're not, right? You very rarely do you see a real decline in efficiency where running backs are still getting the work. It's either they're good, they're good, they're good, and then they're unplayable. Mm-hmm. A-chain.
Yeah. Yeah.
What do we make of it? What do we make of it from projections? I mean, where do we start?
Oh man, this is another one of them really tricky ones. I expect Mostert to plummet this year. I'm projecting it that way. The touchdown rate is obviously nowhere near sustainable. History says they're gonna plummet. I mean, Mostert had 21 touchdowns last season. His expected touchdown total was 13.7. I mean, that gap. So I look at, you know, actual versus expected. The gap between his actual and expected was the 10th highest among all players since 2011. And the 9 players ahead of him all scored fewer touchdowns the next season. Only 2 even got to 11. So that shows you that even these guys scoring at extreme levels just plummet back to earth. It's just so hard to do. I mean, you can't go 2 full seasons with touchdown rates anywhere close to that. He also is probably not, certainly not their most talented running back on the roster right now at his age, right? You would expect Achane to be that guy. But on the other hand, what was the knock on Achane coming into the league last year? His size, he's 5'8", 188. He's not going to, it's very unlikely he's going to be at 18, 20 touch guy.
And he got hurt twice. He got hurt twice. Yeah,
exactly. So I think this is one of them games you play where you just watch in your draft and see who comes to you at a value. I mean, I certainly like the late round flyer idea on Jalen Wright. If he can, you know, I'm worried he's going to get hyped up a little bit too much, but I'm keeping an eye on him in drafts. I feel like Mostert is going to go a little earlier than I'm comfortable with. Achane definitely is going too early for me. You know, I just think they're still going to use multiple guys. I'm worried about his size and his upside and all those kind of things. So, not to mention his touchdown regression to the mean too. He was off the charts as well. Yards per carry, touchdown rate, all those things. So, Mostert, Achane, not really too interested in. Wright as a late guy, sure.
Yeah, Mostert, I just it just goes against my philosophy of like guys who had the best season of their career at age 31 at a position that sends guys to zero pretty quickly. You know, that just not really for me. All right, let's close out here with my favorite team, the Kansas City Chiefs. So two interesting things going on with them. First one being they take a first round wide receiver for the first time. First time ever since Andy Reid has been with the Chiefs, and the first time Andy Reid has taken a first-round wide receiver since Todd Pinkston was the last first-round wide receiver that Andy Reid selected. They sign Hollywood Brown to a total – I mean, it's a very weird contract. It's less than Marquez Valdes-Scantling was making for the team last year, and one gets the sense that it probably was more than Hollywood could have gotten in a different situation, but he's really betting on himself to perform well. They have Rashee Rice, who I'm guessing probably misses four games, maybe more, maybe a little bit less. We'll see. Travis Kelce coming off the least efficient season of his career. And for the first time since Pacheco's been on the team, no Jerick McKinnon. I mean, but also the worst year of Mahomes' career last year, but basically the most efficient quarterback in the NFL. I mean, how do you approach something like this? And how are you approaching it?
Yeah, this is an interesting one because of the, you know, I was kind of in on Rice, but the potential suspension knocks him down. So it's odd. I don't have any Chiefs receiver inside my top 30 at the moment. I do think I'll probably throw some darts at Hollywood Brown. I mean, he's just been a feature target throughout his career and very well could just settle in as their number one right out of the gate. The thing about Worthy that's interesting is, you know, you look back to the guy he's kind of comped to and what his role might look like in Kansas City and who he might de facto replace, and that's Tyreek Hill. You know, that's who he's kind of drawn the comps to. But Tyreek Hill, you look back to his rookie season, right? And he was not, he didn't do much damage as a pass catcher. He had an unsustainable touchdown rate. I believe he had like three return touchdowns, two rushing touchdowns, and just a handful of receiving touchdowns. So he ended up with like 10 or 11, but a lot of that was away from being a pass catcher. And his receiving yardage was not very high. So, you obviously can't count on an insane touchdown total like that used three different ways. And, you know, is he going to be a feature target becomes a question right out of the gate. I just don't think so. I don't think that's a smart bet with Brown there and Rice there for probably most of the season. And guess what? Justin Watson's going to play. And Kadarius Toney, he's going to get his occasional touches most likely. And who knows with someone like Sky Moore. Travis Kelce's going to still be featured. They just gave him an extension. And you're going to have Pacheco and again, like it or not, CEH for now coming out of the backfield a little bit with, you know, upward of 18, 19% of the target. So they're still going to spread it around. That's my expectation. If Worthy's the real deal, then he'll emerge as a fantasy starter, but it just comes down to ADP. And I've been worried since day one because of the team and the situation he was going to be too expensive. And I kind of stand by that. So I just don't know that I'm going to have much of him. I might take more shots on Hollywood Brown.
I mean, I like all three of them, Brown, Worthy, Rice, at cost. Mm-hmm. And my base rate assumption for that is I think the Chiefs as an organization realized they flew too close to the sun with how bad the offense was last year, where it was basically like, let's just make the playoffs and let's just hope Pat figures it out. I mean, the Chiefs were trailing at halftime to the Bills in the divisional round. Like they did win the Super Bowl, but they pretty easily, you know, could have just had like the least memorable season, you know, not made the conference championship. Like it basically a disaster when you have a year of Mahomes' prime. And my expectation is that they want to return to 2018, 2019, where they're, you know, number one in the NFL by a country mile in pass rate over expectation. And that you've actually heard Reed and Mahomes both say this. They really want to bring the deep passing back, that keeping everything in front of the defense has not really been working for them, which I think to your point speaks pretty well for Brown.
Yeah, I'm with you, and I think that might lead to more like boom bust production. So I mean, from a best ball standpoint, you could have a little bit of fun with this team for sure. That's kind of what you want. You know, if you take a shot on Worthy or even Hollywood Brown, from a best ball standpoint, you'll take those kind of boom bust games, and as long as he hits for some deep shots. So it's gonna be interesting. It's just like I do still feel like Justin Watson's gonna drive us nuts. Like they're still gonna play him. They just have a tendency to do that over the years with these guys like MBS and Watson and so forth and so on, just kind of frustrating us. So
Well,
there's going to be an element
they
of that.
love they really value run blocking and you know the ability to just run a really good nine route. You know, that's what they love.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, again, it's not like they're too expensive. So I don't
Sure.
feel you're talking around 7-8 or something of a 12-teamer for Brown and Worthy. Not really a big deal for me. I guess Rice is going a pinch earlier than them. The suspension just makes it so tricky. But again, if he ends up, sometimes that kind of stuff gets deferred or isn't as long as we expect. So he could pay off nicely in that range as well.
Yeah. All right. Let's go ahead and let's go. Actually, here we go. We'll close it with this. If you could have perfect clarity, you could stare into a crystal ball and you could get the answer on one player's stat line for 2024, who would it be?
Oh man, that is a good question. One player, I feel like I would want a quarterback
A
because like
quarterback
if
is a
the
good one. Yeah.
because that answers the rest of the offense for the most part. I mean, if it's Jordan Love though, then that doesn't really answer anything. But if it's like one of the rookies or something, I'm gonna say oh man.
I'll do
Man,
mine.
this
I'll do
go
mine.
you do yours. You do. There's
I
so
think
many good
it's
options. I'm stumbling here. Go ahead. Who's yours first?
so mine right now is Achane because I think it
Okay.
tells you a couple things. One, I mean, obviously, if he's unbelievable, you can take him every single time, and it tells you how healthy he is. If he's bad, if it's a 103 carry, two touchdown season, that tells you need to be taking Mostert and Wright. I also think by extension, you can tell his receiving work and stuff. That'll tell you about Tua. It'll tell you the Miami offense kind of roughly stays on track. There are a couple different guys in that vein. I mean, Kyren you could do, but I think Achane is my answer right now.
Okay, I'm not gonna go quarterback because there's just so many. I wanted to say Jaden Daniels and I wanted to say Anthony Richardson and Caleb Williams. There's just too many. So I'm gonna go with Jonathan Brooks because I think he is super interesting. Ranking him is interesting because you get like outside the top 15 and you get to like Jacobs and Ken Walker and Achane and then even Ramondre Stevenson, Aaron Jones, and you're like, man, there's just nothing. Like no league winners here. You start to get to that dead zone a little bit with Swift and Connor and Brian Robinson and Montgomery, yeah, Harrison Warren, Zamir White, those kind of guys. You're like, I kind of want Brooks more than them because if he gets going a month into the season, think Breece Hall last year, suddenly this is an RB2, potentially an RB1. This guy has the skill set and perhaps the situation, especially if they find a way to get rid of Miles Sanders, who was basically gone on his own last year. He's an interesting one. So I would love to know because I want to draft him. Like I want to draft him well before his ADP. But it's just tricky because of what the timing of that ACL, not to mention Chuba Hubbard and Sanders being in an offense that could struggle. I think it's gonna be better. I think they're gonna surprise a little bit because they actually have some good skill players around Bryce Young this year. But Brooks is a super fascinating situation to me.
So, I mean, I think you get a lot of contextual information there too, because again, if he has this like 11 touchdown season, you're like, oh, Bryce Young probably figured it out. And Xavier Leggett probably
Good
can
call.
play. And Adam Thielen, or Adam Thielen or Diontae Johnson, kind of like you're the it's a what you want from that exercise is you want a temperature taker. So I like that one a good bit. All right, Mr. Clay, we are gonna go ahead and wrap up, tell everyone what they can expect to find from ESPN Fantasy over the next 2 months.
Yeah, just pumping out NFL content now. We're doing work on an NFL piece, league-wide roster evaluations. But of course, I'll have betting content, fantasy content, doing some fun roundtables with Field Eats and all that. So, we got the Fantasy Focus podcast, occasional hits on TV. You'll see us once in a while, and of course, the content over at ESPN.com, the magazine on newsstand soon. We've been working on that. So, yeah, as you know, there's always things to do. It's a year-round game, and we're gonna keep busy.
Absolutely. Yeah, I will be locked in. I actually, your projections were the first one I checked after the NFL draft, because I was like, I gotta know Isaiah Pacheco and Kyren Williams. What are we doing here? Because these guys were going right back to back, and the Chiefs didn't take a running back, and the Rams did. So great stuff there. All right, everyone, make sure that you are following Mr. Clay. Make sure you're checking out all the cool stuff over at ESPN, and we'll be back later this week.